Welcome to Disrespect, exploring the stigma around disability, providing information and interviews to entertain and challenge listeners who care about, or care for, or may themselves have become someone with a disability. Disrespect today welcomes Dr. Gordon Guyatt to the show. Welcome, Dr. Guyatt. Would you introduce yourself?
I'm a professor of medicine at McMaster University and have done a lot of research in healthcare and healthcare issues. The other role I have is as a spokesperson for the Medical Reform Group of Ontario, which is a group of doctors who are committed to public healthcare, publicly paid for, delivered by not-for-profit delivery facilities, and wanting to ensure high-quality healthcare for all Canadians.
You've taken a position on local health integration networks that's leading you to a confrontation with the Ontario government. What are local health integration networks, and how have you come by the position that you have?
Well, it's probably best understood in terms of what's happened in the provinces other than Ontario over the last 10 or 15 years. One of the innovations in structuring healthcare delivery has been to say that having everything centralized in the provincial Ministry of Health is probably not the best way to run things. And every one of the other nine provinces have taken a different route. Typically, in the early and mid-90s, they devolved some of the decision-making to regional levels, and different provinces have done it in different ways with different sized units, but every province aside from Ontario now has some kind of regional health authority, of which the LHINs are a decade late by some people's way of reckoning. Ontario's final solution to doing the same kind of devolution or regionalization of healthcare.
What's the proposed advantage in regionalization? Is it a cost move?
One of the purported advantages is integration. So in other words, instead of the hospitals and the clinics and the home care facilities and some surgical facilities all operating separately, that there is somebody in a region that has some responsibility for saying how should these things work together and try to get them to work together better. So there's an integration goal that typically is part of regional health facilities.
Are we moving in the right direction across Canada and in Ontario?
Typically, the regionalization has got mixed reviews. It seems to work better in some places than in others, and my judgment would be that has to do with a particular region where people are ready to work together in terms of the facilities and where the leadership is effective. So that there's some places in Alberta where particularly the Calgary Health Region has been extremely innovative and where, despite cutbacks on the part of the government, they have managed to make real advances in terms of organization of healthcare delivery. There are other places where it has not worked nearly so well. So I would say that in general, it has its theoretical advantages. It has mixed reviews. There are some people who believe that overall it's made a positive difference, other people who are more skeptical.
So we should be able to cherry pick the best here in Ontario, but I'm getting the feeling that we haven't done that.
Absolutely not. In the worst way of thinking about this regionalization, it is a way for governments to offload responsibility for decisions that will be unpopular in the communities.
So this isn't about cost, this is about accountability.
I said that integration was one theoretical advantage of these things.
Yeah.
Another theoretical advantage is local control. If you say we have a certain budget to spend in this particular region to give the people of that region more responsibility, authority, decision-making power as to how that money gets spent. But clearly it has to be structured to provide, to make that likely to happen. You need local meaningful representation of people who are accountable to the local region.
Yeah.
And this is, in my view, the huge failure of the LHINs is the way it is structured. The board members who are essentially running the LHINs and making these decisions are people who are going to be appointed by the Liberal government so they're appointed up to 6 years by order of the Lieutenant Governor and Council, which is essentially the cabinet. Their remuneration is set by the cabinet. The chairs and vice chairs will be appointed by the cabinet. Cabinet may exclude any persons or classes of persons from LHINs membership. The minister may step in at any time to change the proposed or enacted bylaws. Lynn's board has the power to appoint their own committees, subject to the guidelines by the minister, and the minister decides what meetings can be held in camera and shielded from public accountability. So you can see there's really very little role for the communities in this structure.
Well, in fact, the Lynn's are designed to last the full term of any party's elected term.
Yes.
So even a lot of pressure in the meantime doesn't necessarily challenge their appointment, because once it's made, it's good for up to 6 years. The other thing that I notice is that they've always been given a caveat to the Charter of Human Rights or the Ontario Human Rights Commission, in that they can exclude any person or class of people. They have the capability to make those kinds of decisions, and if they decide that a certain class of person is objectionable, or their contribution to the board would be objectionable in political terms, they just won't have them, and they can't be challenged on it.
I think you're basically right. I think the best way of understanding the problem is by looking what happened to the CCACs, the organizations that are in charge of delivering home and community care, long-term care outside of hospitals.
Yeah. When did this start to change?
Well, I think that I think the story is very instructive. In 2001, the CCACs in Ontario had elected community boards. So the way it worked is you signed up as a member of your CCAC and then you elected the board. The boards were people who were very committed to the delivery of those services to their population and were ready to act as advocates for their population. In 2001, the Harris provincial government decided that there were going to be major cuts in home care, that the services were going to have to decrease, and the boards of the community health centers across the province got together and they fought back. And they made it very publicly clear what the consequences of the financial decisions of the province would be, how services would have to be cut back, how their clientele would suffer. And that made it very uncomfortable for the government. What the government proceeded to do was to change the legislation so that there were no longer elected boards of the CCACs, but rather exactly the same sort of appointed boards as the Lynns are going to have, and predictably appointed people who were going to serve the minister's interests. And since 2001, home care services have been much poorer than they were prior to that time, and the CCAC boards have been silent. They have put up no objections. They have not even said boo. It's been like lambs to the slaughter, except the people who are suffering are not the CCAC boards. They're the community people who should be delivering those services.
And their clients.
That's right. So when you look at the Lynn structure, that to me is what is profoundly problematic. The government denies that it's about cutting services. They deny that it's about privatizing services and relying on for-profit delivery of services. They deny that it's part of getting unions out of the delivery of health care and thus cutting workers' salaries as a way of saving them their money. They deny all those things. But if it turns out that, in fact, that is what it is about, mm-hmm. and I personally think there's a real risk that that is what is it about, nobody at the Lynn's board is going to be objecting. The legislation specifically says that the minister sets the strategic plan, and it is up to the Lynn's board to implement the strategic plan. And the way I would read between the lines of that, whether or not it is in the best interest of the community, so that you have zero chance, if it turns out to be about cutting services, amalgamating, moving to for-profit in ways that are not in the community's best interest, there is zero chance of a pushback by the Lynn's boards. The Lynn's boards are obligated, they're not only obligated to do what the minister tells them, to follow the plan, but there are going to be people who are appointed who owe their allegiance and their appointment and their income from it to the minister.
So they're the shock troops of the cost cutting.
There is certainly a risk that that is the way it is going to play out.
Your fear for the cost cutting agenda, it seems to be founded in the provisions in the bill for competitive bidding
well,
for
there's,
health services?
So, once again, the competitive bidding is one of the issues around potential cost cutting. The bill does not stipulate that competitive bidding is going to be part of what happens, but it leaves it open. And so one of the reasons that I personally and people like the Ontario Health Coalition are extremely worried about this, is that the sort of language that would make us less concerned is absent from the legislation. It could say the first principle is issues that arise from the Canada Health Act of ensuring universality and accessibility of care. That is absent. It could say that we favor the not-for-profit provision of health care. It fails to say that. It could say that this is that the LHINs are not to be an implementation strategy for competitive bidding. It does not say that. And in fact,
it doesn't say what they're an implementation strategy for, except for the minister's agenda.
What it says they're an implementation strategy for is integration of services.
Right.
However, their particular definition of integration of services is completely consistent with cutting services, moving them, ordering facilities to close, and trying to facilitate cost reductions by decreasing the number of facilities and the range of facilities available to the community.
The Liberals have already pointed the way towards more cuts in services by demonstrating a willingness to, I won't say cut services, because they've already downloaded that responsibility to the hospitals, but they've provided the hospitals with budgets and told them it's up to them what services they have to cut.
The theoretical advantage of the LHINs is if there's going to be a particular budget, then the community is in a position to decide how that's going to happen. However, two issues. As I've pointed out, it is not the community who's going to be making those decisions. And second, it is clearly a potential problem that communities could and should be objecting to if the envelope of their budget is such that the services that the community needs and wants is not possible within that budget. Community boards should be there to be able to fight for their communities and ensure that the communities do have their resources so that top quality health care that is needed is available.
And now for a short break from our interview.
Bye. Caroline.
And now, return to our interview.
The Ontario Health Coalition is a broad-based group that includes unions, church groups, elderly groups, healthcare workers, so very broad-based group, and they are the ones coordinating the pushback strategy. The medical reform group, as a group of doctors, clearly is in a position to contribute to this, and we're doing so, but it is the broad-based group that is coordinating the strategy.
Okay. Now, the strategy is implemented has taken a very creative, very unusual, and a little surprising form.
The Ontario Health Coalition, I think, has done something very positive, which is mobilizing the community, so that there have been a host of public meetings around the province where substantial numbers of people come out and are letting the government know that they object to this. There are letter writing campaigns, email campaigns, phone campaigns, and this has in fact made the government extremely uncomfortable and put the government on the defensive.
What's their response been?
Their response has been to say that the people like the Ontario Health Coalition are fear-mongering and that, in fact, all of their worries about this are misplaced. And their publicity campaign, which strikes me as extremely ironic, says this is about community control. The LHINs are a mechanism of community control when, as I've pointed out, that there could be nothing farther from the truth.
So they're trying to paint the people protesting as outside the community.
They're trying to portray them as misguided, ignorant, and self-interested.
So it's a negative campaign. The government's fighting a rearguard, in fact, already.
The attempt on the government's part is to discredit those making the criticisms.
What's your feeling about the impact of the protest?
I think the government has been quite uncomfortable. I think there's been substantial defensiveness. I think they weren't expecting this. One way that I put it is that, at least up to now, Stephen Harper was out to change Canada, but Canada has changed Stephen Harper. In other words, his statements when he says, I support the Canada Health Act, or I'm not interested in just being George Bush's lapdog, I'm going to defend Canada's interests against the United States, and so on. It makes it very difficult for him to act in ways that are at least grossly inconsistent with what he had said.
Right.
So that enacting what his agenda looked like 5 years ago is difficult. Similarly, if the government is forced, as they have been forced, to stand up in public saying, it's not about cutbacks, it's not about privatization, and they have been forced to make those statements repeatedly in public, then it makes it at least considerably more difficult for them to, if that's in fact what it's really about, to implement such policies. They at least have to do it slowly and surreptitiously.
I understand the day of the vote on the bill you employed earth-moving equipment to make your point. What's your feeling about the government's response to that now and in future?
I think the purpose that ultimately we would like to see the bill restructured. We would like to see particularly the LHINs represent community interest. We would like to see explicit commitments to maintaining high quality service for all people throughout Ontario. We would like to see explicit commitments to keeping care delivery not for profit. We would like to see cooperation encouraged among health facilities rather than competitive bidding. Those are the kind of things that we would like to see enshrined in the legislation, which could potentially make it a positive development for healthcare in Ontario. The actions that people like the Ontario Health Coalition have been undertaking are geared to produce that effect. Short of achieving that, we would at least like to cripple plans to do all the things that we are worried about, and the fact that we are forcing the government to repeatedly and publicly say it's not what you people are worried about is not going to happen makes it less likely to happen.
So this is not the end, this is the beginning.
Like a whole series of healthcare fights around public pay versus private pay, public funding of healthcare rather than private health insurance funding of healthcare, like the delivery of healthcare by not-for-profit facilities versus for-profit, these are battles that, sadly enough, are going to be endless. This is just one campaign in a series of push and pushback that is going to characterize healthcare indefinitely.
What can someone listening do?
Join the Ontario Health Coalition. Look at what the Ontario Health Coalition is recommending in terms of sending emails, letters, faxes to the government. And if you are really keen, which would be wonderful, join the campaign in terms of devoting time and energy to the activities that are going to be ongoing to try to make the LHINs the democratic institution that they should be.
It's a good recommendation. Is there anything else you want to say?
No, I'm very happy with that.
All right. Thanks for coming in today.
My pleasure.
Break, you heard Pinetop Perkins from Pinetop's Boogie Woogie, the track How Long. And at the end of the show, Swiss Boogie by Lafayette Leak from Chess, Blues, and Piano Greats. That's all for Disrespect. If you're interested in the show, you think you might learn how to do digital editing, send us your name and your email. Again, radio.stories@gmail.com. We're looking for a volunteer editor. Disrespect. We'll be back next week. The show is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.